Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy, became a pilot, and was shot down over Vietnam in October of 67. He was a POW in Hanoi for 5.5 years, enduring a year of torture and 2 years of solitary confinement. In 1982, he became a U.S. congressman and has been a U.S. senator from Arizona since 1987. In 2000, he ran unsuccessfully for the Republican nomination for president. His name, Senator John McCain. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Tonight, our guest is a true American hero, Senator John McCain. Senator, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's an honor to be with you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. My childhood was somewhat disjointed in this respect, that my father was a naval officer, and we moved from coast to coast quite often and around. I didn't attend the same school for more than 2 years until I was in high school, when I went away to a boarding school. The life of a son of a military, a son or daughter of a military officer is one of great transience, and my father was gone during World War II and during most of the Korean War as well. But that sounds like it was a terrible life, but actually it was kind of an exciting one to go to different places and meet new people, and so there's a certain transience, but it was certainly one with a lot of adventure, and wherever we would go, my mother would try to make sure we saw all the sights and sounds of wherever it was, particularly when we were on our way from one coast to another. So my father was gone a lot when I was growing up because of the nature of his business, and so my mother was very much of a strong figure in our family. I have an older sister and a younger brother. And so the life I had growing up was very interesting, and then, of course, I went to high school, to boarding school, and then I went to the United States Naval Academy, and where I was less than a model midshipman. I probably didn't get the most demerits of anyone who ever went to the Naval Academy, but I think I still probably am in the top 10. And I managed to stand fifth from the bottom of my class at the Naval Academy. No mean feat.
894th out of 899.
That's right. That just shows if my old company officer, my Marine Captain Hunt, were here today, he would say, in America, anything is possible.
Your mom is 93.
95.
95. What did you learn from her?
Oh, I learned the strength of the family, the importance of keeping the family alive. She would talk constantly about my father keeping us aware of him and how proud she was of him. She assumed the responsibilities of packing us up in a car and transporting us from one coast to another. She was just a very, very strong figure, and one that we were very close, particularly, you know, since we were moving a lot. It made the family even more close-knit, and she also was a fairly stern disciplinarian as far as studies go and behavior and that kind of thing. So, but she herself, if I might add very quickly, when she had fallen in love with my father, she was a student at the University of Southern California. Her parents strongly disapproved of my father, who was a young Navy ensign, and they, I didn't find out till many years later, had eloped and gotten married in Tijuana and had a wonderful marriage until my father passed away.
You graduated from the Naval Academy in 58.
Yep.
You become a pilot.
Yep.
And on October 26th, 1967, your 23rd bombing mission, going after a power plant in central Hanoi, changed your life dramatically. Can you share with that?
Sure, I can, Jack. Could I just back up? On July the 3rd, 1967, on board the USS Forrestal, a missile was fired by accident across the flight deck from an airplane that struck the fuel tank of my airplane and started a horrendous fire. To this day, the most serious fire in American history that claimed 134 lives. I barely escaped from that because it was my airplane that got hit, and it in itself is a long story, but it was a terrible day with all these young sailors dying, fighting to save the ship, and they fought it all day and all night, and if it hadn't have been for their sacrifice, we would have lost the aircraft carrier. And then I did one of the stupider things I've ever done in my life, and that was that I volunteered to go over to the USS Oriskany rather than return home with the ship. And then several months later, as you know, in October, I was flying a mission, as you mentioned, first time that a target had been struck inside the city of Hanoi, and it was a very ferocious day with lots of missiles in the air, and I was hit by one and came down in a lake in the center of the city of Hanoi, and a large crowd gathered, dragged me out, and beat me rather severely until the army guys showed up, and I was very, very badly injured and was lucky to survive. And one of the reasons why I survived was that the Vietnamese, after performing a bungled operation on my leg, moved me in with two other prisoners, one named Colonel Bud Day, who later got the Congressional Medal of Honor, and a Major Norris Overly, and they literally saved my life. And then I spent a couple of years in solitary confinement and was offered the opportunity to go home early because my father was a famous admiral and commander of the U.S. forces in the Pacific, and I refused that offer and was somewhat mistreated. And then in 1973, after the Christmas of 1972 bombing, I came home and resumed my military career in the Navy, and then I could no longer pass my flying physical, and so inspired by one Ronald Reagan, I changed careers, went back to Arizona where my wife is born and raised, and ran for the House of Representatives.
When we come back, we'll ask Senator McCain how he spent his time in solitary confinement. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Senator John McCain. During his military career, he received a Silver Star, a Bronze Star, the Legion of Merit, the Purple Heart, and a Distinguished Flying Cross. Now, Senator, let's go back. You mentioned 2 years in solitary confinement. Senator, how did you spend your time?
I spent my time tapping on the walls, attempting to communicate with my fellow POWs. The reason why they kept us separately is they knew that you can break down resistance by keeping people separated. You know, military people especially, but all human beings have a tendency to join together. And by tapping on the walls, a simple tap code that we had, we were able to keep our chain of command and our senior ranking officers, and whenever I fell down, they were there to pick me up and restore my strength and send me back in to fight another round. It was vital, the communications. And of course, I did have a lot of time to think, And also, there was a loudspeaker in our cells, which sometimes would play as many as 10 or 12 hours a day, propaganda that the Vietnamese wanted us to absorb, which was really childish stuff, if you want to know the truth. It had very, very little effect on any of us.
Did you ever lose hope?
No. You had the three keys to success in that situation. One is faith in God, and that's obvious. Faith in your country, because to believe that your country was always working to get you free. Remember, there was a period of depression for us after Lyndon Johnson stopped the bombing in 1968, and we thought we were coming home, and we weren't. And so we had faith that our country would bring us home. And the other, of course, is faith in your fellow prisoners. As I mentioned to you, I never would have been able to do anything that I was able to do if it had not been for the love and care and encouragement and sustenance provided by my fellow POWs.
For a listener tonight that's going through a divorce or has just lost a job, what advice would you give them to get through that?
I would say that many times we are tested. Try to fall back on family and friends, because it's much more difficult to handle one of these crises alone. If you are a person of faith, I have always found that faith helps a great deal and is a source of great comfort. And I think also it's important to always try to know that things are going to be better, that to maintain optimism and hope, and that this country is a country that cares for people who need help, that they're full of citizens that are generous and loving and kind, and know that there's people that they don't know that are rooting for them to succeed and praying for them.
How did you find out that you were going to be released in 73?
Well, in the Christmas of 1972, the peace talks had broken down, and Richard Nixon ordered B-52s to bomb Hanoi. It was a spectacular show. I mean, I love fireworks, but I've never seen anything like that. When a B-52 got hit at 32,000 feet, and, you know, they're carrying thousands of gallons of fuel, it makes for an incredible sight. And so we knew that the war was going to come to an end one way or another. And then after the bombing stopped and they had concluded the agreement, they called us all out into, by this time they had moved us into rooms of 25 or 30 prisoners in each cell. And they called us out, and the camp commander read off the terms of the, as it applied to the POWs, of the Paris peace agreements. That was part of the agreements that we would be told. And then we just waited until the time came for us to get on a bus and go out to the airport in Hanoi, and there was probably the most beautiful sight I ever saw, and that was a United States Air Force C-141 waiting to take us home. And then we got on board, and as we, after we'd been flying for not too long, the pilot announced that we were out over the water, and everybody cheered for that one. And then we landed in the Philippines, where we spent a couple of days, and then they transported us home to our families. And you know, the welcome that we received from the American people is still one of the most heartwarming and moving experiences of my life.
Have you ever met any of your former captors? And if so, what did you talk about?
I've never met any of my former captors again. I strongly supported reconciliation and normalization of relations between our two countries, but my goodwill towards them didn't extend to those interrogators who mistreated and even killed some of my friends. So, but I'd like to maybe tell you one brief story. One of the things the Vietnamese used to do to us is tie us in ropes, tie ropes around your biceps, pull them back, and then pull your head, tie a rope around your head, pull your head down between your knees, and leave you in that position, and very uncomfortable, as you can imagine. And one night I was in that position, and one of the guards, who I had never spoken to, who was just a security guard, walked around with a gun on his shoulder, had no real interface with the prisoners, walked in and put his finger to his lips and loosened the bonds, the wire, the ropes. And then about 5 hours later, he came back in, obviously the end of his time of duty, and he tightened them up again and left. The following Christmas, I was still living by myself at this time, which was about 2 months later, they allowed us to stand outside of our cell for a few minutes because it was Christmas Day. And normally, we were not allowed out at all. And so I was standing out in front of my cell, which happened to be a dirt courtyard, and the same guard came by. He just ambled over, and he stopped right next to me. And on the dirt in this courtyard, right next to us, he drew a cross on the ground with his sandal. And And he just stood there for a moment, and we worshiped together, and then he rubbed it out with his sandal and walked away. He's the one guy I wanted to see again.
You've been referred to as courageous, a person of integrity, a person who can compromise, a hero, and a maverick. What do you say about those adjectives?
I think they're all probably true to varying degrees. I'm also a person who has made mistakes. I'm also a person who has erred, a person who occasionally in his past has done something for political reasons and not the right reasons and has almost always paid a price for it, a person who continues to try to do the best job that he can, but also far from a perfect individual, and it's a work in progress every single day.
We're talking to Senator John McCain. When we come back, we'll ask him why he decided to run for Congress in 1982. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Senator John McCain. A TV movie entitled Faith of My Fathers, based on his experience as a POW on A&E. Senator McCain, in 1982, you decide to run for Congress from Arizona.
Yep.
Why?
Well, I really was inspired by Ronald Reagan. I really was. I thought America was going through very difficult times in the late 70s when we had a defeated army and failed institutions and riots and assassinations. And America was told by our then President Carter we were suffering from a national malaise. And Ronald Reagan had a different idea. He thought we could win the Cold War. He thought the Berlin Wall should come down. He thought that we could free tens of millions or billions of people from the yoke of communism, and he inspired me to want to be a foot soldier in his revolution.
In 2000, you ran unsuccessfully for the Republican nomination for president. What did that experience teach you?
It taught me how wonderful it is to travel around this country and get to meet people and know people and have town hall meetings everywhere and learn about how wonderful and basically American people are. There's nothing as exciting, Jack, and as stimulating as a campaign like that. I look back on it with the fondest of memories. We came a long way, and after President Bush beat me in South Carolina, I have a line that I use. I slept like a baby, sleep 2 hours, wake up and cry, sleep 2 hours, wake up and cry. But it was a tough campaign, and I felt sorry for myself for about a week. I really enjoyed feeling sorry for myself. And then I decided, you know, you're the luckiest guy in the world, and I am the luckiest guy in the world, and I've been privileged to serve, and it's time for me to put all that stuff behind me and get back to work. And I did, and I've enjoyed. As I say, you have on your show interviewed some interesting people, probably far more interesting than me, but none that is as lucky.
Our country today is so divided.
Yep.
Over the war, over the politics, etc. How do we get back together?
You got to reach across the aisle, Jack. You got to say, look, my friends, we all love America. Stop impugning each other's patriotism or love of country or motives. Reach across and let's fix Social Security. We all know it's going broke. We all know that young people are not going to get the benefits that present-day retirees have unless we fix the system. Let's stop all the partisan bickering. I just saw a poll the other day. The overwhelming majority of Americans cannot name one legislative accomplishment of the Congress. And be honest with you, I can't name many. And so, you know, people yearn for us to sit down and work together. We have differing principles. We have differing philosophies. That's why we're Republicans and Democrats. But let's honorably debate those differences rather than let it lapse into the kinds of name-calling and impugning that you see so much of.
It's estimated that in the 2008 presidential election, $1 billion will be spent by the two.
Mm-hmm.
What's the answer?
Stop the 527s. These are these unreported and unlimited funds that go into these campaigns that just attack people. And they are illegal, and unfortunately, the Federal Elections Commission, which is a body that's supposed to regulate that, and because it's clearly against the law, has refused to do so. We're in court with on this issue, and hopefully we'll win. But the other thing is that, frankly, Jack, at the end of the day, the voters have to reject candidates and politicians that engage in this kind of behavior. Look, the reason why you see these attack ads is because they move numbers. When they stop moving numbers, then they'll stop running them. So people should ignore these attack things that they are inundated with.
How many times have you been to Iraq and talk about the job that our soldiers are doing in Iraq?
I've been to Iraq many times. The latest was in December. They're doing a magnificent job under the most difficult circumstances. They're the bravest and the best that our military has ever had. I'm proud of them. It's a very difficult fight. I think that we can succeed with this new strategy and this new general, but I also understand the frustration, anger, and sorrow that most Americans feel about our lack of progress. Many mistakes were made, and we're paying a heavy price for them. I believe if we just leave, that chaos will ensue.
What can the typical American do to help these great Americans over there?
Well, let's make sure that no matter how we feel about the war, let's make sure that we continue to show our support for the young men and women who are serving. They're marvelous. You know, one thing, they're very proud of what they do. The next time you see one of them in uniform, just go over and pat them on the shoulder and say thanks for serving. You know, that's all they want from us.
Globalization,
yep,
is transforming the state of Michigan.
Yep.
We're not in a recession, a depression. We're in a transformation.
Yep.
Talk about globalization.
Look, it's a terrible thing. Our economy is good, yet there's clearly been dislocations of almost unprecedented proportions, certainly in a state like Michigan. We're going to have to design programs that work for our displaced workers so that they can, one, figure out how you apply for a job. That's a very important aspect of it. And then second, utilizing, I believe, our community colleges to set up programs that will train people and educate them so they can be eligible to enter this new information technology workforce. And we have to give them assistance in doing that. I believe that we also need to have people be able to take their health insurance from one job to another and their pension from one job to another as they move from one job to another. And don't underestimate the gravity of this problem, particularly in a state like Michigan. It's full of human tragedy, and we must, particularly those of us that believe in free trade and fair trade, that we take care of the victims of the globalization of the economy. It's going to be one of my highest priorities.
Last question.
Yep.
What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Find a cause and serve it, a cause greater than your own self-interest. Serve it, and it'll be the greatest experience of your life, and whether it be part-time or whether it be joining the Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, the military, volunteer organizations, Habitat for Humanity. There's plenty out there. Serve a cause greater than yourself, and you will be the one who gains the most from it.
Senator McCain, thanks for serving our country for 40-plus years.
Thank you, my friend, and thanks for having me on.
It's an honor.
Bye-bye.
God bless. This is our 90th show. I'd like to say a special thank you to Mike Feasey and Steve Stewart, who gave me the opportunity and took a chance on a show of this concept. I'd like to thank everybody from WJR who's treated me like family from day one. A special thanks to Cindy Cooper and John Marshall, who have produced these shows. A special thanks to Kelly Fisher, who's done the research and helped me get many of these guests. And lastly, a special thanks to Trust in Us, who's been the sponsor of this show. When we come back, I'll offer some of my reflections on the past 90 shows. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. As I reflect on the common traits of the 90 guests that we've had on the show, I come up with the following. One, they all started with nothing except a huge dream against insurmountable odds. Be it an Ernie Harwell who was tongue-tied, be it a maestro Tom Wilkins who never met his dad, never played a musical instrument. Secondly, each one of them had life give them huge setbacks, curveballs. Wayusi Olosola was the top-rated 16-year-old basketball player in the state of Michigan, and one day, a couple bullets goes into his back, and he lives in a wheelchair for the last 20 years. Overnight. They held on when most others would have quit long before. Florine Mark lost 450 pounds in 9 different attempts to lose that weight. They didn't focus on yesterday. They didn't worry about tomorrow. They simply focused on today, and they did their best each day. They all believe in serving others and being very humble. They surround themselves with great people who have the same culture and who were world class in the role that they played. And they did this not when they got successful, but they found world class people to buy into their dreams early on before they were a success. Incidentally, that's the very thing that turns that person's dream into reality, other great people. They set extremely high standards for themselves and their team. They're masters at communication. Dave Dombrowski said it very well. He said, you know, communication, you can't be a great communicator unless you're a great listener. They're optimist. Against all odds, they continue to believe over and over and over. They've all stayed humble. They give back to their fellow man each and every day. Most of them, very quietly, very under the radar. Hoot McInerney, a shining example of this. They view each day as a new tryout. Ross Perot said it first. Each day in business is a tryout. And faith has played a major role in their lives. Whether they're very open about that or whether they keep it to themselves, they are Christ-centered people. To them, faith is not a spare tire in their life. Faith is a steering wheel of their life. All 90 guests have been asked one question. The last question of every show has always been, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight? The words, the answers, have been in different words every time, but it's been the same message 90 times. Whether it was astronaut Gene Cernan, whether it was Cardinal Mita, whether it was Rhonda Walker, Eleanor Jositis, Lou Holtz, Dan Rudiger, Rudy, it's always been the same. Figure out what special gift, what talents God has blessed you with. There's been 10 billion people to walk the face of the earth, but only one has been exactly like you. Two, work to become the best you can be by using these gifts and talents. Don't focus on, don't worry about what you don't have. Focus on the talents and the blessings you do have. Work for or with an organization that you believe in. Life is too short to try to toil in the world today with people or an organization that you don't believe in. Work very hard. Never give up. Never give up. 2% of the people in America quit after they hear the word no once. 2% quit after they hear the word no 5 times. Friends, 95% of us quit even before we ever hear the word no. We quit before we ever try. 2%, 2%, 95%. That leaves 1%. That's the ones that never quit. And those are the ones that reach their dream. And lastly, what they all say is, the rest will follow. Don't worry about all the other stuff. All that other stuff will come in line. Given time, it will all work out. When we come back, I'll share a few more stories, special remembrances from these 90 shows. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. Several people have asked me this last year and a half, what's the single most amazing lesson I've learned in doing these shows? The answer is that for most of these people, the greatest setback, the most unbelievable life-changing event, while initially overwhelming to them, eventually turned out to be the greatest thing that ever happened to them. A few examples. Chuck Colson was an advocate, a confidant of Richard Nixon, had the office next to Richard Nixon, one of the most powerful people on earth. Because of Pentagon Papers, he goes to prison. And he now realizes that going to prison was the greatest thing that ever happened to him. While in prison, he met Christ, and ultimately, he started Prison Fellowship, which is now in 112 countries, over 100,000 volunteers going and teaching Christ to prisoners all over the world. Last segment, I talked about Wayusi Olosola being gunned down, sitting on a porch, talking to a girl. A car pulls up, 5 kids get out, 357s, they start shooting into the house. It was a drug bust. They missed the wrong house. They were supposed to hit a house 2 doors away. Instantly, he's in a wheelchair the rest of his life. And he takes that and turns that thing into lemonade. Nick Vujicic was a 23-year-old Australian kid. The most mature 23-year-old kid you'll ever meet in your life. Spoken on 4 continents in the last 4 years to over 1 million people, he's just written a book, No Arms, No Legs, No Worries. He was born with no limbs. And initially, he wanted to commit suicide. The kid had great humor. He said, you know, it's kind of tough to commit suicide when you have no arms or no legs. And he begged God for arms and legs, and then he came to realize that in God's master plan, what God wanted him to do was go around the world and talk to our youth about talents and gifts and using what you're blessed with. And he makes the statement that if God came down and said, Nick, I'll give you those arms and legs, he would say to God, God, no thanks, I don't want them. We've heard that over and over and over. Some of the guests, our own Mitch Albom here, I said, Mitch, you write an article every day. You do a 2-hour show every day. Every other Sunday, you're on ESPN, the sports reporters. You've written 3 best-selling books. Those books, 2 of them have been turned into movies on TV. You're in a band. How do you do all you do? And his answer was, Jack, I only do one thing. The one thing I do is I'm a storyteller. Well, he's a world-class storyteller, day after day after day. 89-year-old Father Hesburgh was the president for 35 years of University of Notre Dame, arguably the greatest university president in America in the last 100 years. His eyesight is bad. He's breaking down. I said, Father, if you had one more dream left in you, what would it be? And he thought, and he said, Jack, I would educate all the women on earth. Because if we did that, all the wars, all the violence would go away. You see, the moms are the one that teach the kids. And if every mom in the world was educated, a lot of our problems would go away. I had the honor of Lou Holtz coming on. That was as a direct result of Coach Rick Forzano getting him for us. And I had 30, 40 questions. We did him over the phone. I was all prepared for all these questions. Coach, talk about these 3 points, these 8 points. Tell about this story, this story. And 3/4 of the way through the show, I'd only asked him 4 questions. And I'm sitting here thinking, I got all these questions. And then I thought, Jack, this man gets $25,000 a speech. This man is giving you the answers without you asking any of your questions. That was an amazing show. I asked Bill Pulte to come on 10 times. Finally, just on his own, he said, Jack, I'll come on. I want you to come to the office first. I want you to tell me every question you're going to ask. So we start the show, and normally the first question is always, can you talk about your childhood and your parents? And his answer was, Jack, I had a mom and a dad, and we lived in Ann Arbor. And then silence. And I thought, whoa, this is going to be a tough show. But then he come alive, goes to Mass every day, 14 children, built his first home in 1952. Last year, Pulte Homes built 46,500 homes. Quite a story. We had Gene Cernan, the 12th and the last man on Earth to walk on the moon. He spent 75 hours on the moon. And he said that he felt like he was sitting on God's porch, looking out onto the Earth. He was the second man to ever walk in space. He was going 18,000 miles an hour. He said all of the planning they had done, nothing worked right. I said, how hard was it to walk? And he said, well, you know, I was hanging from this tether. We didn't really know what we were doing. We had a 100-pound pack on me. But I do remember at one point taking 3 steps. And in that time, we had crossed the Gulf of Mexico. I've come to realize, friends, I'm not the host. I'm the beneficiary of this show. To listen to these people, to have dinner with them, to study up on them, and to actually have them as the guest has been phenomenal. And I end by thanking you, the listeners, for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it, and you've got my word. We'll try to get better each and every week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything truly is possible. Spoiler.